starts to. Oh, I was going to say, didn't. All right, good morning, everyone. It's 9 a.m. I'd like to call the Alaska Bycatch Advisory Council meeting to order. And with us this morning is myself, Stephanie Madsen, Brian Gabriel, Karma Olvey, and Kevin Delaney. John Jensen got stuck out at a remote hunting camp and was unable to get back to Petersburg, so he will be unable to join us today. And the first item on the agenda is to approve the agenda, and I would like to entertain a motion at this time.
Move to approve the agenda.
Second, Madsen.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any changes or modifications? Okay, agenda is adopted without objection. Now we have the meeting minutes from September 5th, and you've had ample time to review those, and there were a few minor modifications, spelling things that were changed and then resent to you, I believe. I'd entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes from September 5th.
I would move to approve the September 5th minutes, Madam Chair. Madsen?
Second, Gabriel.
Okay. Any comments? All right. Without objection, the minutes have been approved. First, I'd like to make just a couple of announcements. In the last several meetings, we have not enabled the chat for the members of the public, and it is enabled today. If you have technical issues or if there are problems testifying, don't hesitate to use the chat, and Kyle will be monitoring that so that if there are issues, they can be addressed. And we've been a little bit leery about doing this, but we're pretty comfortable with the fact of the participants and the members of the public that are here today, and that we won't have any pornographic things posted or foul language or things like that. So we're going to go ahead and enable the chat. Also, I put into the chat earlier the agenda for today and a link to the progress reports on Bycatch task force recommendations that have been put into play for both state engagement, for research, and then also for management. And this is a work in progress. This is a fall report. There are some links that are embedded within the reports that don't seem to be working right, but we're going to get those corrected. So you can find those also under the Bycatch Advisory Council website under the reference library. It's titled Progress Reports, a tab on that. So I think that'll be very helpful to see how many things have actually been put into play since the task force report came out in November of last year. I do have a quick update on the subcommittees. We will have some more information under item 6 under the subcommittee reports, but I would like to announce that the Bycatch Utilization Subcommittee has been formed, and we'll talk more about that later. The last announcement that I have is regarding the town hall meetings that were held on September 19th. The Commissioner, Doug Vincent Lang, and also Deputy Commissioner Rachel Baker came to Kodiak for a Bycatch town hall meeting, and Rachel's going to give us a short report on that. But the second Bycatch town hall meeting is scheduled for Homer on November 27th, and a flyer is going to be posted to our website and also put into the calendar for information on that. It will be at the Land's End at 6:30 p.m. on November 27th. But at this time, I would like to ask Rachel if you can give us a short report on the town hall meeting in Kodiak on September 19th. We'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, I sure can. Just the sound check, making sure you can hear me.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And good to see everyone online and those of you who are online with us. Thank you for that introduction. And I'll just remind the Bycatch Advisory Council and the public that really this Kodiak Town Hall meeting for Bycatch that we're calling it really came out of this process, and Madam Chair in particular suggested this as one of the action items that could come from the state engagement recommendations from the task force in terms of more direct state of Alaska engagement with fishery participants and the public in terms of bycatch issues. And so really this was a trial run, if you will, of these town hall meetings that, as Linda mentioned, the commissioner is committed to continuing. And so it was really just a chance to attend the meeting primarily with the commissioner. Like Linda said, I was there as well. And we also had in Kodiak Mark Sticker, who is groundfish and shellfish manager and really expert to address some of the issues that we knew would come up in that meeting. And so I'll just kind of hit the high points of my takeaways, and we'll invite Madam Chair to provide additional perspective if you'd like. But, you know, as we knew, the meeting in Kodiak, largely much of the discussion was centered around some ongoing issues related to the Gulf of Alaska tanner crab fishery, which is, you know, we heard loud and clear both at the town hall and at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, really the importance of that fishery to the community of Kodiak. We find ourselves in a fortunate position that that particular Gulf of Alaska tanner crab stock is doing quite well. And over the last few years, given some management changes to provide some stability and in that fishery, has really been very important for participants in that fishery in Kodiak and elsewhere, and the community of Kodiak in terms of fishery activity and processing and things like that. You know, the discussion at the town hall really ranged, you know, from some of the biological life cycle population variability characteristics associated with the Gulf tanner crab to, you know, some public and other fishery participant concerns about maintaining, you know, the current really positive high-level state of Gulf tanner crab, and if there are additional protections that are needed. In addition to those, there's a number of areas, time area closures around the islands Kodiak that really are intended to protect tanner crab during vulnerable periods of their life cycle. But just given the current importance of this particular fishery to the community and some of the other concerns we have about other important stocks, a lot of the comments that the commissioner heard really were focused around are additional protections needed for the Gulf of Alaska tanner crab stock. And just as a reminder, these town halls were mostly an opportunity for, you know, the audience to for the commissioner to hear about concerns from individual members of the audience. But I'll just remind you that you know, the council is responding, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council is responding to these concerns about Gulf tanner crab and potential need for additional protections, and has requested additional information, essentially initiating a potential action, to use that jargon, asking for information on stock information, potential approaches to gather more information through observer coverage or electronic monitoring, to help determine if additional protections for Gulf of Alaska tanner crab are needed. And so that was helpful to hear some of those more Kodiak-specific concerns about what we know is an important issue. And then I would say that Gulf of Alaska tanner crab discussion kind of moved into more general discussion about, you know, just the broad suite of fisheries that contribute to the economy of Kodiak and the different Gulf of Alaska fishery operations within the Gulf. And it's very important for someone, you know, in a policy and management position like the commissioner, I think it was the audience felt it was important for him to keep in mind how important it is to keep those differences between the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea in mind in terms of prioritization of management issues and those kinds of concerns. No surprise to this group, the commissioner heard several different perspectives on the impacts of trawl gear on fish and shellfish species and habitat, generally in the Gulf of Alaska area, but sometimes throughout Alaska. And again, particularly potential impacts related to the difference in types of trawl gear. So potential impacts related to bottom trawl gear used to catch Pacific cod, rockfish, and flatfish, and the potential, in contrast, impacts of midwater or pelagic trawl gear that's generally used to catch pollock in our Alaska fisheries. And just wanted to note for this group that in Kodiak and elsewhere, the commissioners is hearing these concerns about particularly the potential impacts of midwater pelagic trawl gear related to habitat impacts and potential unobserved mortality of crab and other bottom-dwelling species. And as a participant in the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, I think many of you are aware the state of Alaska is moving forward to address these concerns in the ongoing action to consider additional fishing restrictions in the Bristol Bay Red King Crab Savings Area in the Bering Sea. That's the action in front of the council. And I think the most, pressing issue where the bottom contact issue for midwater trawl gear is coming up that the council is dealing with. And then the next, what I would call a high-level topic of discussion at the Kodiak Town Hall was really the observer program for federal fisheries off Alaska. Also, a topic of discussion at both, through the Bycatch Review Task Force and thus far here at the Bycatch Advisory Council. Again, in Kodiak, the comments we heard highlighted the importance of considering Gulf of Alaska fisheries separately from those in the Bering Sea. And I think that is an important distinction because overall in Alaska federal fisheries, it's about 93% of our federal fisheries groundfish harvest was monitored by human observers and or cameras in recent years. And so, I think just to provide context, the concerns that we heard in Kodiak were really focused on that remaining portion of harvest that is what we call partially and not fully observed during the fishing season. And, based on the comments we heard in Kodiak, it's clear there are ongoing concerns about this limited portion of harvest that is partially observed, much of which does occur in the Gulf of Alaska groundfish fisheries. And, we heard recommendations to address these concerns that sort of run the gamut from, support for some focused increased coverage through observers or electronic monitoring on specific fleets or fisheries to, quite honestly, recommendations to scrap the whole observer program and start from scratch. And so these are the kinds of recommendations that both the commissioner and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council are hearing. And in terms of the state of Alaska response to those concerns, the commissioner has identified continued improvements of the federal fisheries partial coverage observer program as a state of Alaska priority at the council. And so continued input on how we can address ongoing concerns by potentially focusing additional coverage on priority fisheries or fleets or other potential approaches to continually improve the program are always welcome, because we always have to remember that we do have limited resources for our river program. And so there are always those constraints to work in. And then finally, again, just of interest and already really covered by Madam Chair is the Commissioner in Kodiak also did receive a strong recommendation to move forward with the Bycatch Review Task Force recommendations for the state to take incremental measures through regulatory processes to improve bycatch utilization, focusing on species that are otherwise marketable but caught in non-targeted gear or discards within a directed fishery that have to be discarded by regulation. And, in receiving this comment in Kodiak, the commissioner noted real appreciation for this concept and support, but is really seeking further input and assistance from industry participants and representatives to address the You know, there are legal, administrative, economic, fishery operation challenges moving forward with increased utilization. And so really appreciate the announcement, Madam Chair, in your beginning remarks about the formation of the subcommittee for that, because I think that will be really helpful. The state of Alaska is interested in moving forward with that, but would really appreciate some technical assistance on some of those challenges. And so that's really good to hear. And then just wrapping up, Madam Chair, overall, just really wanted to pass along, the Commissioner and I found that
I think we may have lost Rachel.
But we heard there really were consistent with those addressed by the Alaska Bycatch Ruby Task Force and here. At the bike.
I think we're having some technical difficulties with Juno. Rachel seems to have her webcam seems to be frozen, so I would just, hopefully she can get back to us. I would just add that we had 65 people, some people flew in from out of town, which I was pleased to see, attend the meeting, and while there were very divergent, sorry Rachel, we lost you for a minute, and I was just saying that we had 65 individuals attend, and while there were a lot of divergent opinions, I was very pleased to see how civil the conversation and the discourse was. And so I think that encouraged the commissioner to continue this process and hold more town hall meetings. And I think he was pleased with the turnout and the information that he received. So Rachel, if you want to finish your wrap up, then we'll ask for questions from the council, the Bycatch Advisory Council.
Sure. And I'm not exactly sure where I cut off, but I was just going to wrap up by saying that, overall, I felt like the comments we heard in Kodiak were really consistent with what the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force and this advisory council have heard, along with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. And so it was good for the commissioner to hear those, you know, community-based perspectives from individuals participating in the fishery and you know, community members. And really just repeating what you said, Madam Chair, in terms of the commissioner is committed to holding additional town hall meetings. We have the one scheduled in Homer next month. And the only other thing I wanted to say is this is a work in progress, and I think we're going to try to make improvements as these town hall meetings are held. But if members of the advisory council or the public have, you know, specific recommendations for communities or timeframes for additional town hall meetings, then please just let me know.
Thank you, Rachel. Are there any questions for Rachel from the council members? Kevin.
Yeah, good morning. Rachel, good morning. I'm kind of wondering, and I think you covered it, but you cut out and came back and cut out and came back. If we look at the Bycatch Task Force process and the ensuing report, and then kind of reflect on some of the work we've done here as this group, are we missing anything? As you go around and listen, was there any major topic, any issue that you feel has come up since the process started that we missed or that we just missed? Or was our work pretty complete? And, you know, has it got staying power, I guess?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. And my short answer is I have not identified any topics that were missed. I really think, and the Kodiak Town Hall confirmed it, I sort of had that feeling, you know, given my participation in the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and hearing another group of stakeholders and the public there. I really think that the Bycatch Review Task Force report and recommendations were really comprehensive and covered the issues that I've been hearing, quite frankly, you know, since I started in this role and that we continue to hear.
Thank you. Good to hear.
Brian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that report, Rachel. I know in Kodiak, when we were going through some of the issues related to that, the fisheries down there was rationalization was a topic that was, you know, it seemed like it was up in the air. There was some people for, some people against. Was that, maybe I missed it. Was there anything that was touched on as far as rationalization of the Kodiak fleet? Was that discussed at all?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. Not at the town hall meeting specifically that I recall. The commissioner did meet with some individual gear groups that requested meetings with him while we were in Kodiak, and that was an issue. But at the town hall meeting, that is a topic that didn't really come up.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you so much. That was a really good summary, Rachel, of the town hall meeting. And again, the chat has been enabled if people have any technical issues. And in the chat, there is a link not only to the agenda, but also to the progress report of the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force recommendations. We've put in a fall 2023 progress report, and we will be working on fixing the links embedded within those reports. So you don't need to call or text me that they don't work. We're aware of that, and we'll be fixing that. Next, I'd like to welcome Dr. Ed Farley, who is chair of the Alaska Salmon Review Task Force. And Ed is with National Marine Fisheries Service. If you'd like to give us a little introduction before you get started, Ed, about your background and what you're currently doing for NIMS, I'd appreciate it. And then you can share your screen and begin your presentation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ed Farley. I work with NOAA Fisheries, Alaska Fisheries Science Center here in Juneau, Alaska. I've been here for over 20 years. My current position is I'm a program manager for the Ecosystem Monitoring and Assessment Program. We're the ones that do the research in the ocean that connects climate change and variability to what's happening in the ecosystems and what that means for fish. We are a team that works on small fishes, and a lot of those fish are salmon, and so most of my work that I've been doing here within the Alaska Fisheries Science Center has focused on climate impact on salmon at the juvenile life history stage, because we feel that is the critical period that salmon must meet to grow and gain fat prior to winter. I've also been involved within the North Pacific Islands Fish Commission for at least 20 years. I'm currently the chair of the Science Steering Committee in that commission, and was very involved in the International Year of the Salmon, which many of you may have heard about. I could go on and on, but I think I'll go ahead and get started, and I'll share my screen. Make sure it's working. Everything's working. You guys can see my screen?
It says that you started screen sharing, but it hasn't come up yet, so.
Oh, okay. Still hasn't come up, huh?
No, you might click out and then try it again. I don't know, maybe Kyle can assist with some technical support, but.
Showing that it's sharing my screen, but. And we got this working right away, and then now it's not working.
And you need to make sure if you have a dual monitor that you click on the screen you want to share.
Yeah.
There we go. We have that.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, Madam Chair and members of the Bycatch Advisory Council, thank you for inviting me here today to talk about the Alaska Salmon Research Task Force. I am the chair of the task force, and I've already introduced myself. One of the things I wanted to point out is on the lower left here, we see the reference. That's the act that created the task force. This act is only about 4.5 pages long. So it's really interesting to get into some of the details, which I will show you some of the, and the next two slides are more bullet related, but just to kind of give you some of the information that's coming out of the Act. So this is, these are the purposes that we were given. Number one is to ensure that Pacific salmon trends in Alaska regarding productivity and abundance are characterized and that research needs are identified. We are to prioritize scientific research needs for Pacific salmon in Alaska. We're to address the increased variability or decline in Pacific salmon returns in Alaska by creating a coordinated salmon research strategy. And we're to support collaboration and coordination for Pacific salmon conservation efforts in Alaska. One of the things I want to point out is, you know, we're in the North Pacific and salmon are from a lot of different places in North Pacific, but this is very, this act is very specific to Alaska. And the duties, we have three that we're to do in the next, in the year that we have. One is to produce a list of existing knowledge, so we're to review Pacific salmon science relevant to understanding salmon returns in Alaska. We're to identify the gaps. These are scientific research gaps in understanding Pacific salmon life cycle in Alaska. And then we're to recommend research, and those recommendations are to fill knowledge gaps that warrant further scientific inquiry. So we have 1 year to complete the duties, and we have to produce a report similar to what the BICASH Task Force did. So what we have done is we convened in June of 2023. Just so you know that within the Act itself, there's specific language on how we were to form the task force. I didn't want to go into all that detail, but we could have a maximum of 19 members, and we did fill that maximum capacity. So we do have 19 members of the task force. One of the first things that we did was to meet in June, go over the 4.5 pages to kind of get an idea of where we're headed over the next year. We produced an approach and milestone timeline, which I'll show you a little bit later. And we also formed a meeting schedule, which I also show you in a little bit later in terms of the details of the meeting schedule. But within 30 days of our formation of the task force and the first day we meet, we had to form an Arctic-Yukon-Kuskokwim working group. That was also direct language within the Act. And so we sent an informational out to the communities in the AYK region, asked for members to be nominated, either nominate themselves or others nominate them. We had 15 members of the task force that also wanted to be part of that AYK work group. It was decided within the task force that we would select every person that put in a nomination for themselves or for others if that person wanted to be in the AYK work group. And when we were done with that process, we had 30 people from the AYK region plus the 15 members of the task force. And I'll give a little bit more detail on the work group and at the end of the talk. The next thing we did is we started to schedule meetings. We have meetings that don't involve the public, but we also have meetings that we want public input, and we've done that bi-monthly. It's called the in-progress review, and we've had one in July, we had one in September. We're having one coming up in November, and I'll give a little bit more information on that one. That one's going to be a hybrid meeting. So within this timeline, all the way through June of 24, when we have to produce a report, we're to, again, identify the existing knowledge gaps and research needs. And what the task force has done is we have worked within the Alaska Department of Fish and Game regional framework, and we've separated teams into westward region, southeast region, central region. We had an AYK region, but that group became part of the working group. And so these teams are meeting regularly to identify existing knowledge. We're also just starting to work on identifying gaps. We had a timeline to kind of get the existing knowledge mostly in our database by about this month, and we have over 600 references at this point, and by no means is that all of them, and so we're going to continue to work on that with the public and others to make sure that we get all this existing knowledge database in place. And now we started working on gaps, and again, we're organizing our research gaps by gravel-to-gravel life cycle model, going from eggs all the way to spawner, and this has just begun, and we're really just now touching on some of the research needs, but again, that there's a lot of more work that's going to be done on developing research needs. So I've got a couple slides that are just going to show where we're at. This was the approach and milestone plan that we developed in June. again, we had till July 27th to develop the AYK work group, which we that is now in place. In August, we began to close out our review of existing knowledge just to kind of move on into our next phase, which was to start working on the gaps and research needs. We did develop a draft outline, a report outline that we're using right now. And I just wanted to put this in yellow because we're in October and we have a draft document that we've already, of our report that we've already put up on the website that went up last Friday. It's a really early stage, but the reason that we're putting it up on our website is to get public input and comment, and I'll show you how we're doing that in a moment. And then just the rest of the approach and milestones, you can see that, you know, December's halfway through, so we're approaching the holiday season. Things probably will slow down, and then we're going to really speed up again. We have a draft final report that we need to have out in April. We're trying to get that done so that we get 1 month public review. And then May, we're going to take all that input and create a final draft to have it done by June. And then this is just the meeting schedule. I've already mentioned some of these. We're meeting every other month, but I just wanted to highlight this one. We have a meeting in Anchorage on November 14th and 15th. It's going to be a hybrid meeting, and it's open to the public. We have day one where we're going to have a half a day where the task force is going to be reporting on some of our existing knowledge and gaps, but then we're going to have another half a day where we're going to accept public comment and testimony. And then on day two, we're having a discussion on our research needs. It's just going to be, initial discussion, and then we're going to allow another half a day of public testimony. And then just you can see there that we're going to be meeting in January, March, and May, and then our final report due in June. So I'm just going to touch base on this in-person meeting that we're having. We had a flyer that went out, I believe it was last week, kind of giving more information. It's going to be at the William Egan Center, Convention Center in Anchorage. If anybody wants to attend in person, that's where it's going to be. We're going to have a hybrid format with a GoToWebinar, and we're also going to have a conference call capability. So there's a couple of links there, but one of the things I wanted to do here is I'm going to link to our website just to kind of give you an idea of where we're at and what we're including on our website. I assume that website's now showing.
No, it's not.
All right. I think I'm going to have to stop and share a different screen. Hang on.
Okay,
how's that?
We see it now, but you might want to, there we go.
Okay, so one of the things I just mentioned is that we have this really early version of our draft report, and the reason we wanted to get this out is now is because our hybrid meeting in Anchorage on November 15th, 14th, and 15th, we really want to be able to have folks to see where we're at, which, we've just started, as you all probably done through your task force meeting, but we want to make sure that we're getting people to understand where our gaps are and just the knowledge that we're looking for. So I'm going to open this up and kind of give you an idea of what we're doing. This is just a little bit of a blurb on you know, the comment period for this draft, early draft, and what we're looking for. There's some boilerplate stuff. But I wanted to get down to, you know, some of the things that we're working on. Now, there are specific things within the Act that we're to report on, and one of them is this productivity trends for Alaska salmon. So we do have those in the report. And also we're supposed to report in relation to North Pacific. So this is just some information from the North Pacific Atlantic Fish Commission on harvest of salmon around North Pacific for all nations. But this is where we're going to be really looking at developing some of these concepts. Again, we're trying to use this gravel-to-gravel life cycle approach, and we're trying to understand potential impacts of production. And right now we have identified six, and that's by no means all of the potential impacts to salmon production, so we're looking for feedback there. But anyway, we're looking at where within the life cycle some of these potential impacts occur. Some will occur in certain regions, you know, like in the marine. Some occur throughout the freshwater and marine, just to give you an idea of what this figure sort of represents. And then just an example, again, these are examples just to provide information to the public on what we're sort of, you know, using our existing knowledge and some of the information on gaps to come up with what potential climate change conditions might be doing for impact. And some of the initial comments that we're getting during our meetings and from the public is, we know climate is occurring, but what are we supposed to do about that? And so, you know, one potential gap then is what actions are necessary to mitigate impacts from climate change. And so, again, that's just one example. There could be others. And then we have, you know, possible approaches. anyway, we set it up in this format, you know, freshwater change. You know, we know that some things are happening in the freshwater. We understand that, you know, having nice, diverse landscapes are good for diversity and genetic structure and returns for salmon. And, you know, so one gap might be, well, what measure of habitat performance could we use that supports biological diversity? So these are just examples. Again, we're going to be developing these even further. I know many people have heard about marine food limitations. You know, we have a lot of hatchery salmon that are in the North Pacific that may be competing with Alaska salmon. So this, again, is one of the potential impacts that, and, you know, we need to figure out, you know, how we're going to address some of the gaps with research needs. And we have another that came up with hatchery wild interactions. So, you know, this is pretty much the body of the report now. Obviously, we've got to come up with a prioritization, because that's what the Act asks us to do. Then we're going to produce, or at least have some suggested coordinated salmon research strategy, because that's also within the Act. You know, what does that look like? And so we're still working on those. So you can see we have quite a ways to go. And I just want to also point out that since this is on here now, let's say, well, how does the public have a chance to address anything that's in this online report? Well, we do have an application that we created for public input. And in this case, you know, people can provide their email, their name, and then, you know, we have information. This is what information on existing knowledge do you feel that we need to have that we don't have, similar to data research gaps, you know, what does the public think we need to be doing, and what additional research is needed. I also wanted to put in here, because I think it's important for us to kind of get an understanding of what the public feels a coordinated salmon research strategy would look like, and anything else. So we also have the act on here in case anybody wants to take a look at that and all the other information. So I'm going to stop sharing this screen now and then go back to my presentation. Okay, so as I mentioned early on, within the first 30 days of our meeting in June, we had to form an Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim working group. And we have done that, and we have 45 members in that working group, and they have one objective according to the Act, and that is to focus specifically on the research needs associated with salmon returns in the AYK region and identify applied research needed to better understand increased variability and declining salmon returns. So that is very specific, and the working group is coming to this objective through pretty much identifying existing knowledge and gaps. So working similarly to what the task force is doing. And they started in July, and they have a short time frame to get a report out to meet that objective that they're supposed to provide. And right now, the work group itself nominated two co-leads, or actually nominated a co-lead for the public group. The task force nominated Catherine Howard as one of the co-leads, and of the other 30 members, they voted and they selected Dr. Daniel Schindler as the other co-lead. So those are the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim work group co-leads. And they met for the first time in September. They're meeting right now. The work group is meeting every other week. They haven't had public meetings for the work group. I believe that the co-leads are discussing having a public meeting sometime in January. However, they do have a report that is due to the task force on March 15th. So they got a very short timeline. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and stop. This is the task force members. It's myself as the chair and Jacob Ivanov. He's from UNOCLEAT. He's the co-chair. A couple of people weren't pictured here, but if you get online, you'll see more of informational on the task force. This is who we are. So I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing and take questions.
Thank you, Ed. We had a question in the chat about the report, and just to reconfirm, this draft report is available on your website, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so if you go to the Alaska Salmon Review Task Force, you can Google it and it'll show up, and then right at the very top there's a draft report, and this is a report, correct?
It is.
All right. Thank you. I have a quick question, and I'll open it up for the others. On page 15 of the draft report, you're on the gravel-to-gravel potential impacts to production. Is there a reason why, and there probably is a good reason, and I'd like to understand it better, is there a reason why bycatch is not listed here as one of the potential impacts of production?
So we have freshwater and marine harvest. And within that, there's a number of different harvests that are variables, and bycatch is one of them. So if you went down into the report, you'll see various species catch and bycatch and under a marine and freshwater harvest, and that down there is there.
I understand. So under marine harvest, you have a couple of categories.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. I'd like to open it up now for the Bycatch Advisory Council members if you have questions for Ed.
Yeah, Linda?
Kevin?
I'd like to drill down a little bit on the question that you just asked because it comes to my mind. If we look at the top six subjects that you're pursuing, I don't see bycatch among them. And yes, in the marine harvest category, we can drill down and get bycatch. What are we, as a bycatch focused group here, coming off of the bycatch review task force effort, what are we supposed to glean in terms of the relative importance, if you will, of bycatch to the big picture, if anything? So just following up on Linda's comment, trying to drill down on it a little more, are there places that we should be focusing or, you know, talk to me about that. Thank you, Ed.
All right, so within that section, you know, there's been within the salmon life cycle, there are a number of different places where mortality occurs, and obviously bycatch is one of the areas of mortality. Marine harvest is an area of mortality. So I guess I'm trying to understand, so within the bycatch advisory council, I think that you would need to know that we are going to have some language in the report that understanding bycatch dynamics as one source of marine mortality will be important, along with many other sources of marine mortality, which includes impacts of climate and those that might be happening within freshwater and the marine impacts of other sources of mortality, which may be competition and things happening within the food web. I guess we're a research task force, so, you know, we would be looking at this in more of a research perspective. So what gaps are there within, if we focus specifically on bycatch, what is the gap within that source of mortality that we need to be addressing more definitively? So if you, as a task force, see something that we're missing in terms of what you feel, or as an advisory council, I should say, that you feel is a gap that we're not addressing and a research need that's appropriate for that gap, I mean, those are the kinds of things that we're looking for and would like to be able to include in the report. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, that was fair. I was hoping we'd get to this. Do you tell us that there's a gap, or do we tell you that there's a gap? And I guess I kind of sense that I'm waiting for you to say that there's a gap in terms of bycatch harvest data that's preventing you from moving forward and assessing the things that you're charged to assess. And I'm not hearing you say that, which doesn't mean that what we do is not important or that the estimation of bycatch stock of origin and magnitude is not important. It's not there aren't gaps there that are preventing you from moving forward. If I'm wrong, correct me, but that's what I'm gleaning. Thank you.
No, I mean, as I said, this is the very initial part of the report, and we're now just getting into the gaps. Obviously, if you read that one section of our report, first sentence in the marine harvest is on PSV and state bycatch. It's a gap. It's there. It's already within there, but, you know, there are many other gaps within harvest, too, that we need to understand. Which are also written in that part of that small paragraph. And again, we're just starting. So these are just initial attempts.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to make a note that we did receive a presentation from Dr. Howard at our previous meeting in September, I believe. And the research that you are looking at was a priority in part of our research recommendations through the task force. So I think there's a linkage there in regard to trying to understand more about the biology and the gravel. The gravel, I think, is a great study, and I'm pleased to see that you're putting some time and energy into that. Karma, did you have a question?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Farley. Thank you for your presentation. My name is Karma Olvium from the Native Village of Eagle. And I wanted to just ask if on the data gaps, if Indigenous knowledge and local knowledge is being considered for those for that research.
Yeah, thank you, Karma. Definitely. In fact, I just wrote an email that is going to go out to tribal leaders to please review this initial draft and make sure that the traditional and indigenous knowledge is being addressed. So also keep in mind that we have the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Working Group has 30 members from the region. Many of them are from the Yukon and Kuskokwim. We have one member from the Arctic up in the Piaget, but they're also working on this same indigenous knowledge, traditional knowledge need. So that input's definitely going to be in the report. And one of the research areas that the Act has is traditional ecological knowledge of salmon populations in our ecosystems. So it's something that we're working on.
Nice. That's great. And is that going out to most of the villages on the Yukon and Kuskokwim and all those? Or where is that going to?
And so the email that I just crafted this morning is going to go out to tribal leaders. It's our communications group here at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. I'm not sure who those are, but they're going to send the email out on behalf of myself, the chair, and Jacob Ivanoff, who's the co-chair. And we're looking for exactly that, the indigenous people and traditional knowledge, ecological knowledge.
Nice. Thank you.
I would just add that maybe Karma might wish to see a list to make sure it's fairly complete and to, if she's not, to be added to that list as one of the tribal leaders out there.
Yes, I am the chief of the Native Village of Eagles, so I would like to see that. Thank you, Linda.
All right, any other questions for Dr. Farley? Thank you so much for giving. Oh, Stephanie, did you have a question?
Well, I didn't have a question, Madam Chair. I just am impressed about the amount of work given Dr. Farley's other responsibilities and the timeline that they're working. And I know he's got a big group that he also has to organize, but it's very impressive, and I appreciate the work and their update.
Oh, thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Dr. Farley. I know you're very, very busy, and so we'll let you go and welcome Scott Goodman with the Bering Sea Fisheries Research Foundation. And Scott will be talking to us a little bit about crab research, particularly some of the tagging study information that they've been doing, which, as you may recall, was a priority for research that was put in by the task force, the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force. So, Scott, welcome, and you may share your screen.
Great. Good morning. Can you guys hear me okay?
Great. Yes, I can.
Thank you, Linda. Yeah, let me share real quick here, and I'll join up for just a few slides and a brief update. All right, you guys seeing my presentation screen mode?
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So I'm Scott Goodman. I'm the Executive Director for the Bering Sea Fisheries Research Foundation. I think I know most of you, if not all of you. We are a group that's been around for almost 20 years now. And we're a group that is a cooperative industry-sponsored group. We get most of our support to date directly from the crab fishermen and the participating processors and communities and other partners. In the current period for the enduring crab crises here, we have some research support that's coming from new sources, and we're working to do our best to prioritize high-level research to continue going with information that would generally fill gaps and try to improve management through this crisis period. So I'm going to give a presentation that is short and brief about one of our focus areas, and it will touch on one of our recently completed projects, which we're calling CPS-1. That's basically the collaborative pot sampling project, the first of its kind really in the winter-spring period. And we relied on the charters from two crabbers. We got this work done in March and April of this year, directly funded by ADF&G and NIMS, for about 25 charter days each on two of these boats. And I will cover just very briefly the summary results from what we caught out there during this period. We got about 10,000 Red King crab from about 637 pot lifts. We had a split that was a little different or anomalous for us in terms of the sex ratio, about 77% males, far fewer females. And importantly, we put out 100 tags during this work, which has become the focus point for a few slides that I'll talk about. I wanted to include this one here just for folks' reference. I presented this information a couple of different times already this year, but this focus area for research for movement and tagging research on Red King crab is part of a multi-year project, and currently we have about 1,200 tags that have been placed, including satellite tags and acoustic tags. That does not count any of our traditional tags, which are the spaghetti type old tags. So when I say 1,200 tags, I'm referring to smart tags or smart technology tags, those that are capable of monitoring the crab's movement to an extent. Of those 1,200, there's really only about 75 currently that are at liberty now. Most of the other 1,200 acoustic or satellite tags, the smart tags, have been either expired or used already in that they've popped off the tag of the crab and transmitted their information to satellites. So the information from CPS-1 that I'll focus on briefly here with about 10 slides for a few minutes is these 100 or so tags that we put onto new hard shell mature male animals during this March-April period this year. You're seeing a mature male animal that has this sort of plastic spaghetti string harness on his carapace across his back, and the dark thing there that looks like maybe like a fishing bobber with a wire coming out the end of it, that's the satellite tag. So these things have a pre-programmed release. When they hit a certain date time, they actually pop off the crab and they float to the surface, and at that point they transmit their information to a satellite. This map shows you a grid that we covered for this work in the collaborative pot sampling. You're looking at several 630-some circles that are representative of the pots that were deployed. The yellow triangles are the places, 100 approximately, that Red King crab were tagged. So this is where they were put out. You can see that in some places there's more than one tag applied. So we initially tried to put tags out to broadly cover the distribution of where our sampling occurred, with an additional goal objective of going back and making sure that we had extra tags put in some of the higher density areas. This is a plot that shows just the initial points of where the crab was tagged, and then an arrow of where the crab popped up. And I wanted to pull this one up first to give an idea that in this period, which was generally March, April, to about the first week of June for the time at liberty and then pop-up, this looks like kind of a spaghetti plot, and it needs a little bit of interpretation to try and help with, you know, is there a generalized vector of movement here for these mature males or not? So this kind of gives you the quick first take of where these crab popped up, which is the end of the arrow, and where they started, which is the yellow triangle. When you pull this information together, and it takes a fair amount to summarize it well, you see a summary here that is helping to interpret that there is a generalized vector here of movement, which appears to be to the northeast and to the north. Zooming in a little bit, I don't want to spend a lot of time here, but, you know, when in a perfect world, we would get a idea of where the crabs were during that period, and really what we get is because crabs move so slowly, we get their start point and their end point. So we have to draw a vector. We don't know anything about their movement between the beginning and the end. And at the end point, depending on the weather and the sea state and wind, et cetera, there's usually some sort of an analysis that helps us minimize what the end point actually meant in terms of, you know, did it transmit its data immediately or was it a day later or a few hours later, et cetera. But this one, with the help of one of our partners at ADF&G, Andy Nault, is a depiction of sort of what the ellipses or the endpoints of that look like. When you zoom back out, it may be a little difficult to see, but this is kind of just zooming back out to the full picture here. And you can see that, generally speaking, these ideas or representations of our error are kind of small. They're not drifting all the way across the bay. When you blow those up a little bit more, this is what you get. This is just the endpoints. So flipping back to the beginning points in a clean way and seeing what the endpoints look like, you can see that there was some movement. It started with a representation across the grid, and it ended up with some more representative pop-up locations of the distribution at the early June period. A few slides to kind of put some additional pieces together. This zoom in here takes the green dots, which is where our tags popped up, which were placed during the CPS1 project. And in the background, you see this sort of yellow and orange and brown depiction of where the summer survey, the NIMS summer survey distribution for mature males, just in a raw number of animals that were caught at those stations. So you kind of see some two pieces together here. Was there alignment or not between the summer survey and where the tags popped up? So generally you see some alignment. And we're doing some further analysis pushing into this to trying to understand the movement vectors and the correlation between the summer survey and the period where these crab moved to. As a final couple of slides, I would note that there is some additional work that was part of the ongoing tagging work. There was females that were tagged during our summer survey, the NIMS summer survey. They're depicted by this figure, which shows where they were put out and how many were put out at each location. There was about 75 females and 40 males that were tagged. This is the female slide, so you can see that generally these occur mostly in the inner Bristol Bay area with a number of tags that overlap with the Red King Crab Savings Area. There were also red king crab that were tagged right near the northern boundary of the district and up outside the boundary to the north and northwest, and then one or two tags. Actually, I think that's five tags, plus one additional station out by the Pribs. As far as males go, zooming in just a little bit closer, there was 40 tags put out during the summer survey, and these ones are at liberty. Some of these are beginning to pop up now, so we're starting to get some of the information back from the summer survey on these tags. But this is a depiction here a little bit more broadly spread to the north-northwest than the females were. So just a quick follow-up here on some of our upcoming research. We have another one of these projects that's on the immediate radar for us. We're calling that CPS2. It would generally be a repeat of using two crab charters to go out again in the March-April period of 2024. We have some sampling plans that are in the works right now, which are going to include a little bit of camera work. We're adding a trawl sampling component. We are not going to be applying any tags during CPS2. We're relying more on the application of additional tags to be during the summer period. There's an NPRB project that we were just partnering with, which was granted, that will get about 140 tags with a specific focus on female red king crab. And that will be, those will hopefully all be deployed and placed in 2024. So we're coordinating with our partners, that's both ADF&G and NOAA, very closely. There's a lot of ideas and a lot of priorities and a lot of development of what should we be working on right now? We're doing lots of work to be connected in and figuring out where we go with some of this work. So research project plans are going to be dependent more and more on the alternative funding sources, which have come from some congressionally directed spending and some of the disaster relief money, which is still in the firming up of the total available to the Research Foundation and some of the coordinated research. But we're noting that for folks, and we do our best to stay in touch with supportive stakeholders, which cross as many arenas as we can, and we're open to questions and to being reached out to anytime. So I wanted to just close here and mention that our science advisory group has Dr. Stauffer, Gary, who's been with us since the beginning, Dr. Gordon Cruz, Madison Hellership, who is a PhD graduate student at the University of Washington working on crab assessment details, and then Dr. Tim Lohr. I would quickly note that we're working on a formal write-up of CPS-1 with our state and federal partners, and Dr. Lohr is taking the lead on that. That should be available very soon. So that would include all of the details and then some that I just went through on the distribution that we observed. And Linda, I think that's all I had. I could make this available if folks would like it, and I can take any questions that folks might have.
Thank you, Scott. Yes, please email it to me and we'll put it up in our presentation folder on the website. And also, if you wouldn't mind, I would appreciate very much if you would shoot me an email from time to time with regard to the bycatch review task force recommendations on crab research and work that you may be doing or know of that's being done. It's a pretty daunting task to try to keep track of the research that is going on out there that has that were recommended by the task force and that has some bycatch implications. And this looks very fascinating, and it was a priority with the task force, so I'm happy to see that this is going forward and that you do have some funding for this. And I do have wonder if there's any questions from any of the council members for Scott. I don't see any at this time, so just keep us in the loop in regard to your work and the research that you're doing. I appreciate it very much for your time, and send me the email version of the PowerPoint so we can post it, okay?
You bet.
Kevin?
Let me get back on here so I can see, Scott can see me. So, you know, we've been through some tough times, as you more than anybody knows, when it comes to commercial harvest of red cane crab at Bering Sea. It looks like we're going to have a season this year. And as a bycatch task force, we looked into the different sources of bycatch mortality, including, you know, the dead loss in the directed fishery. So with a limited directed fishery in a couple of years, what additional emphasis, if any, is being placed on reducing the dead loss in that commercial directed fishery?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Kevin. I'll do my best through the chair here. I think, first of all, we may have actually coordinated on shirts. I'm looking at camera there. I think we may have the same shirt on. I'm aware of a few efforts that are ongoing and underway as part of trying to minimize, you know, any extra time or impact that comes from the directed fishery. There was a small level bycatch experiment that we tried to build into CPS-1, which was basically outfitting about 40 total pots, 20 for each of the charters, with some different gear than was typical. And we wanted to, basically it was bigger mesh on two of the panels, the front and back panel of standard pots, and then some plans to extend and soak those pots for a longer period, and then test the difference between catch per unit effort of the legal target males and anything that was a non-target, so either the mature females or the juvenile males. We had to pull the plug on that one for CPS-1 because of some logistical reasons, including weather and ice. But we do have part of that out with one vessel right now. So during the fishery, which I think is a little bit of a better matchup in terms of trying to do an experiment in time and space when it's the most meaningful. So one of our charters from the spring has agreed to do basically part of that research now. So that is a small test. It may be revealing in terms of some practical fishing practices that would be part of longer soaks or maybe some relatively simple and modified panel changes, larger mesh across different parts of the pot to let this directed gear fish a little bit more efficiently with less interaction with females and juvenile crab. Briefly, in addition to that, I'm also on communications group with some of the fishing activity right now, and I'm just a bystander. I'm just watching. I'm not chiming in, but it is the intention there is the directed fleet is specifically trying to coordinate to avoid areas where they may be seeing some females or juvenile males, and also coordinating so that with such a small fishery, if there's remaining gear in the water and someone has reached their landing quota, that there's some potential for gear sharing so that people aren't pulling and dumping any crab back. So just an additional smaller effort to minimize some of the discard and handling mortality.
Scott, thank you very much. That was informative. And, I like your shirt.
I would just add that Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers has been working on, and also the Tanner Crab folks in the Gulf, on trying to work on some gear modification research that they're doing, as Scott mentioned, and one of those is longer soak times with larger mesh to be able to sort as we've seen in the Aleutian Islands Golden King Crab fishery, it's very effective in self-sorting if you soak a little longer and have larger mesh gear. And so I know Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers is working on some things. And in fact, when we get to this in our agenda topics for March, I think that we'll want to have a discussion about possibly looking at some of the gear modification research going on, not only in the pot fisheries, but also in the trawl fisheries in regard to bycatch avoidance. I think it's pretty interesting and fascinating, some of the things industry is trying to initiate. So that being said, any other questions for Stephanie?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Scott. Scott, I was noticing on, and I've seen this presentation before, I appreciate it. It appears that, some of the movement is into the no-trawl zones. And even the Red King Crab box closes March 15th, half of it does. So I'm wondering maybe, in the future, I don't know if it's appropriate or not, but noting those no-trawl zones for the public, because I think it's pretty important to understand that not only in some of the summer surveys that we've seen and now in some respects confirming in your winter spring survey, the crab are moving a little bit, as you point out, north and east. And that is already protected from trawl up there. And half of the Red King Crab box is shut down March 15th. So I think it would just help with the public to understand where those zones are, if that'd be possible. But appreciate your work and look forward to learning more.
Thank you, Stephanie, to the chair. Yes, I would just quickly note one slide I didn't pull up was sort of the differentials that we're still working on understanding more completely about the seasonal movement for both males and females. So what I showed was, for this winter, spring to early summer period, and we know from some of our prior work about male movement into the fall, they're generally moving towards or into the Red King Crab savings area. And then the male movement into the winter appears that they they kind of generally are understanding at this point is that they turn around and move back east to some extent. So just a quick note and follow up, your question is very important. The seasonal movement has some details that we're still working on.
Thank you.
All right. I don't see any other hands raised. Thank you very much, Scott. Very good presentation and good information. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you again.
Next, we're going to have a little bit of an update on our subcommittees. We have three subcommittees, the first being frequently asked questions, and John and Stephanie had offered to take the lead on that through the summer and the fall. We have been working on trying to develop questions that we believe would be of most interest to the members of the public. Stephanie, would you like to give us a quick report on that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's harder than we thought. You know, we can come up, I think Madam Chair encouraged us to come up with 15 solid questions and then try to find the appropriate people to answer those questions. I'm not completely sold that we are the ones that have the answers, but we can facilitate getting the answers to the questions. But what has occurred is that some of the questions that we received through the public are very general, like where can I find BICAC information? Well, I think that's a difficult one to answer because it depends on which BICAC you're looking for. Is it a state, fed, or international BICAC that you're looking for? So I think we're going to have to take the ones that we have now and kind of be a little bit more specific so that we can make sure that we're answering the questions that people want. And many of them were just like that. There were general questions about what are the numbers, where can I find the information, who controls it, and those are all very important questions, but the answers are kind of depending on what is the specie and who has jurisdiction as to where you might find it or how those numbers are calculated. So, and then there was a general one about the observer program, and I'm not quite sure, you know, how to address that given the variety of fisheries that have diverse observer requirements. So, John and I will continue to work on it and kind of try to narrow it down and be very strategic in the questions so that we can make sure that we're answering the questions that people want answered. Some of them are pretty simple in the sense that we already have frequently asked questions from the North Pacific Management Council, from the Board of Fish, from other entities that we can pull from, like what is BICAC. But some of the other ones get a little bit more confusing when you have a general question that doesn't really lead you to a general answer. You need to be more specific. So I'm sorry to say that we don't have those done today, but we do have the 15 that we'll be working from to get a little bit more specific and strategic.
Thank you, Stephanie. The second subcommittee that we formed was to track research recommendations, and this is also a very big task because there's so much research going on in so many different areas, and Stephanie and I are taking the lead on that, but we're depending on all of the BICAC Advisory Council members to be able to assist us in when you hear about something going on with research that was a recommendation made by the task force, please get that information to us so that we can put it into our updates and put it into our progress reports. And the last subcommittee is a BICAC Utilization Committee that was just recently formed. Brian Gabriel, who is on the BICAC Advisory Council, is chairing that committee. And the other members of that committee are Chelsea Riddell. She's a processor representative, assistant director of Alaska Groundfish Data Bank, member of the council's advisory panel, the North Pacific Council's advisory panel, and she worked as a fisheries observer. The other committee member is Duncan Fields, who is a harvester representative. He's a lifelong salmon harvester, previously served on the advisory panel to the North Pacific Council and the North Pacific Council, and he's a board member of ASME now. So that's just a quick summary. Brian, would you give us an update on the committee's plans, please?
Yeah, so it looks like we'll have our first meeting November 20th at 9 a.m. And part of that will be to flesh out our agenda. As you guys recall, as we developed these recommendations as part of the full task force, Duncan was pretty instrumental in sort of pushing this utilization of bycatch forward into an amendment that made it to our final recommendation. So this is and basically what the scope of this committee would be, as I understand it, and we'll probably dial in a little bit more as we move along, is to determine what barriers there are, regulatory barriers, and physical barriers, things like that, would how processors would deal with this type of product that comes into their plant, you know, how they would be treated, how it would be paid for, and things like that. So I think the whole idea is, like, we're going to go down this road of how we can better utilize bycatch. It sort of starts with, what barriers are we facing right now to actually take advantage of that and utilize that bycatch. And as you all know, there's different types of bycatch seasonally, size-wise, and things like that. So I look forward to it. It'll be an interesting process to try to figure out, where we end up from there. I see Karma's got her hand up, and I think I might know what she's going to ask. Go ahead. And I don't know if there are questions directed at me, Karma.
I just want to make a comment. I'm very concerned about the bycatch utilization project because of, these are prohibited species catch, and to then either sell them or process them, how are we going to make sure that there's regulations put in place to make sure that the bycatch is just not, it seems like that would just make it a lot harder to regulate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I kind of figured that's what you're going to ask, because I picked up on that when we had our full task force and we were going through some of the, it wasn't necessarily with the Gulf Alaska, but the Western Alaska subcommittee meetings and talking about sea share. I think there was several members of the Western Alaska Native communities that had concerns about, and I get it. It was a very good valid concern regarding, we're being shut out or restricted from our traditional catch on chum salmon, let's say, but we're sort of getting these chum salmon that are, being delivered to us because it's bycatch, So I can certainly understand the concern there. And I would like to, if you don't mind, definitely have a conversation regarding that aspect of how we incorporate that into our subcommittee.
Are these subcommittees totally closed, or like we can all sit in on these?
I can answer that. The subcommittee meetings are open meetings. They are not going to be the 30-day. We don't have the 30-day requirement to post them. All of the Bycatch Advisory Council members will be noticed about subcommittee and given an opportunity to join and listen in and participate. Members of the public who would like to also need to send me information, send an email, or put it on the Bycatch Advisory Council website that you would like to be notified in regard to these meetings, so that we can make sure that you're able to listen in and participate in these meetings. But the purpose of the subcommittee is to begin. The first meeting, I believe, is going to be an organizational meeting to talk about frequency of meetings, delivery of a work product, and the scope of what the subcommittee is going to try to do. This is a huge issue. It's something that has been discussed for many years. It's been addressed in a limited way in previous years, but there are logistical, economic, there are regulatory hurdles, there are challenges with the political environment, and there's your concern that is shared by many in regard to legitimizing bycatch. And so I think that the subcommittee is going to have a good opportunity to begin to flesh these out and provide a report to the commissioner, as is our job, through the Bycatch Advisory Council, a report to the commissioner in regard to what some of the challenges are. So I believe, Carmen, you're going to have every opportunity that you want and your region wants to be able to participate in these discussions. I hope that answered for your question. And, Brian, sorry to jump in.
Oh, no. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want you guys to know the tremendous amount of work that the tribes do to try to get regulation, as our ecosystem is really, we feel in trouble when we can't fish on the Yukon for 4 years now. So have bycatch utilization, I feel, is not helping the problem. It could almost make it more profitable to be able to use that bycatch, and I just want to make that statement here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Karma. Brian, did you have anything more?
No, that was it. I appreciate Karma jumping in there, because I did have, like I said, that was one of the things that I was considering being the chair for this committee, is how we sort of address that aspect of moving forward. I think it's totally a valid concern, and should certainly be fleshed out and looked at in context of where we understand, from the West Alaska fishery participants out there, what that means to them, but also maybe how we can, if there's a way to use that as an advantage, then that might be an option too. So that's where I'm hoping to go with it.
And as everyone recalls, it was a unanimous decision to approve the exploration of this idea at the Bycatch Review Task Force. It was the first overarching recommendation that we made, and so I think we're doing due diligence by doing this exploration and being able to try to understand some of the challenges and hurdles that are being faced. So at this point, I think we're going to take about a 5-minute break. We'll come back at 10:31 with, I'm sorry, Rachel, did you have a comment?
Sorry, I did, just Madam Chair. For the public, I really appreciated the discussion you just had. And following up on Chief Olfi's question, I wondered if, and maybe this is for staff, for members of the public, if they are signed up to receive Bycatch Advisory Council email notices, will they also receive all subcommittee meeting notices, or do they need to sign up separately? I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
And I'll grab that to you all.
Are you asking me?
I think for the Board of Fisheries staff, I think that I have no problem at all having this sent out to everyone who signed up for the updates. We do not have the requirement for the meeting notice because of the number of subcommittee members that we do have with the Bycatch Advisory Council. So meetings may be noticed shorter, sooner than what that we might have otherwise. But yeah, I don't have a problem. I think that's going to be something. It's a work in progress as the subcommittee meets. We certainly don't want to preclude anyone who would like to participate and listen to these meetings. The subcommittee, they're more like a work session, because the Bycatch Advisory Council itself is going to review the subcommittee report and get updates from them and have discussions here at our meeting. So the subcommittee is more like a work session than an advisory session. Does that answer your question, Rachel? Okay. Thank you. So let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll now come back at 10:33. Can people do that? And we'll begin with public comment at that time. 3. I'd like to make sure that the Bycatch Advisory Council members are back with us. If you could please turn your camera on to let us know that you're here. And it appears that we've lost Brian Gabriel. He may be trying to rejoin. Internet connections have been kind of unstable for some areas this morning. Kevin and Karma, are you with us? Maybe 5 minutes wasn't quite enough, huh?
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Okay, Karma, great. And Brian is now reconnecting. Kevin, are you with us? Are you back with us? We'll give him another little bit. Brian, we see you rejoined. And while we're waiting for Kevin to join us, I'd just like to let the public know a few things. We have enabled the chat, so if you have difficulty signing on or have being able to speak or having audio issues, you can put information in the chat. There is a 3-minute limit on public testimony, and we'd like to ask you to identify your name and affiliation when you begin testifying. This will help the note takers to be able to keep accurate notes of the information that you're providing to us. And again, no personal attacks. And this is a good opportunity for members of the public to tell us how they think we're doing and where they think we should be heading, and try to be courteous and respectful. I would hope that we could. So at this time, we'll open it up for public comment, and we'd ask you to please raise your hand. If you use the hand raising feature in the bottom of your screen, you can raise your hand if you wish to speak, and you can be recognized.
Linda, if I could add for anyone that's on, I believe we have one phone participant, and so you can use *9 to raise your hand if you're on by phone.
Okay, perfect. And when you are recognized, your audio will be enabled. Eric, and I'm not sure of the last name. Eric, if you would like to unmute yourself and begin to speak, identify yourself and your affiliation, please. Eric, you are mute. Oh, there you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hey, my name is Eric Anderson. I live in Palmer. I've been following this bike hack issue for a while. I first want to say thank you guys all for joining the task force and trying to help us come up with some answers. This bike hack deal is probably the most contentious issue with our commercial fisheries, our subsistence, and our personal use fisheries statewide. Besides the bycatch, has anybody looked into possibly also, I know this is not in your guys' avenue really, but there's other sources of potential issues for the decline in crabs and salmon. And one thing I was thinking of is the Fukushima power plant and our ocean current. And so it seems like Alaska, the Bering Sea, is dead center bullseye for the weather currents and the ocean currents coming from East Asia. And I was wondering if that plays into effect any kind of, or is any sampling going on when you guys are out there taking these things? Are you looking for possible radiation, poisoning? Is Fukushima an issue? That's question number one. But I guess question number two is, what do you guys plan, or what is the end outcome after this committee rests? Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. I don't think we're poised to respond to your question about Fukushima at all, and the time for testimony is not really a give and take with the task force, but your question about what's the end result expected, I think if you go to the bycatch advisory page website at ADF&G, and someone can help put that into the link, the charge that we have from the commissioner is to review the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force recommendations and provide input to the commissioner with regard to how to implement those recommendations regarding bycatch. So please don't hesitate to to peruse the website. There's a lot of information on there. During the task force meetings that we had, the many meetings, this in 2022, we basically had a ton of presentations, and those are all posted. So there's a trove of information available on the website for people, along with the charge to the current Bycatch Advisory Council membership to report to the commissioner and make recommendations to him. So I think the buck actually stops with the state. That's the responsibility of the state, and any questions that you have regarding where they go from here would probably best be directed to the Commissioner of Fish and Game and to the Governor's Office. But I would like to see if there's anybody else who would like to submit comments, testimony. I see Brooke Woods. If you can enable her mic.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Brooke Woods. I'm from Rampart. I just joined this discussion, and I just want to put on record that this idea of utilizing bycatch is a very harmful idea and should not be something that this bycatch body should be considering, given the fact that we're seeing the worst salmon returns in the AYK region and how harmful it would be to be able to profit from bycatch. And I know that salmon bycatch is not the only concern for Alaska, and I just want to express my concern for this idea of utilizing bycatch in a way for industry to again, you know, dominate fisheries, gain more profit. Thank you.
Thank you, Brooke. Thank you for your comments. I hope that you're able to join the bycatch utilization subcommittee when they begin to discuss some of the hurdles and challenges that would be faced. This is definitely one of them. Thank you. Anyone else would like to submit some comments? Last call. That was easy. Well, let's get to the action part of the agenda. We have an annual report due to Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang that we need to prepare and submit prior to the end of the year. And my goal is to take volunteers, again, who would like to help work on that report. I think we would use the progress reports as part of our report, in addition to a little bit about the four meetings that we held this year, which he asked us to do, is hold four meetings. And also, we will be scheduling a time with the commissioner to go over the report to be able to answer any questions that he might have and to understand and get a little better idea of where he would like to see us prioritize our work next year and get some information from him. So we will be scheduling something for with the commissioner, and I do not have a date. I don't have it could be after the first of the year, it could be before the end of the year, but we will try to get our report finalized. I would like to before the end of November have it finalized and submitted, because I know December is such a busy month for everyone. So are there any volunteers who would like to help with the drafting of the report?
I will.
Madam Chair, you can put me down there too. I think you did a great job on getting us going on the progress report. I appreciate your formatting of that and kind of filling in, and I think all of us should take a hard look at that and make sure we have everything included. So I would like to continue to help you with that, which I think, as you mentioned, is going to be the basis of our report to the commissioner.
All right, great. And, of course, all the members will have adequate time to review and comment on the report before it is submitted. So any questions on that or other comments?
This is Karma. I will help also.
Okay. I had your name down. Thank you. Okay. So as we look to our spring meeting, I don't know if there are recommendations that you would like us to begin thinking about for presentations from the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force report, whether that be state engagement, whether that be research or management recommendations. If there are particular issues that you think that we should try to get some presentations for, I don't know if you're prepared now to be able to provide some of that information to help us be thinking about that, but any discussion on our meetings coming up, I'd like to schedule a meeting for March, and I had suggested March 19th, and that seems to be problematic for some, so I'm wondering if March 26th might work. And we don't have to finalize that at this point, but it would be nice if we could do that rather quickly so that we have that in place, because, as you know, things do tend to get scheduled, and it's difficult sometimes to schedule meetings. And so we'd be looking at that, and then also a May meeting for the spring. Stephanie?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I got distracted looking at my calendar. I thought the original dates you put out there were fine with me, but I understand there's conflicts. I guess, I wanted to talk about the research aspect. I think in the spring, we may be positioned to look at the North Pacific Research Board and Pollock Conservation Cooperative, the North Pacific Management Council. NPRB has put out their notice for proposals. I think by springtime we might know what proposals have been submitted and maybe what proposals NPRB might be selecting, which would be good information for us to understand some of the research that could be taking place. And that goes along with the North Pacific Management Council, too. They're in their triennial review of their research priorities, and I know that they're, you know, getting a lot of public comment from the Science Center, plan teams, SSC, public. And I think that might be a good opportunity, Madam Chair, to kind of get a refresher on what research is either being funded or about to begin so that we can keep track of that list.
Well, and I know that the whole idea of research, one of the recommendations that was made by the task force was to try to figure out a way to bring it all together so that there's a little bit more coordination, if you will. There is sometimes, it appears, in the past we've had some duplication in research by either agencies or other entities that were trying to do the same things. And one of our recommendations on research was to figure out how we could provide a mechanism to try to bring that research information into one place so that and that might be a discussion we would want to have in the spring as well. One suggestion that I had for the spring was to look at some of the gear modification research that is being done. I know University of Washington received a grant to look at lights in trawl. I know that some of the trawl industry folks have presented testimony to the North Pacific Council regarding research they're doing on their nets and with use of cameras. I know that the POT, both cod and crab fisheries are doing gear modification research. And so that would be another area that I think would be highly interesting to us because there's a direct nexus to gear modification research and avoidance of bycatch. So I think that would be a good one. And when we get into general research, there is a nexus, obviously, to all research and how the fisheries are managed and the more information that we have. And so being able to pull information from NPRD and the North Pacific Council research priorities, I think, would be ideal. So that might be over the course of two meetings to be able to get that information, because that's a lot of stuff. Did Kevin or Karma, Brian, any other comments?
Madam Chair, I might just add too that NPRB made a presentation to the council, and we could maybe not need the presentation, but we could ask for the PowerPoint that went with it, or have them come and present. So, because they're looking up at the Arctic as well, integrated research plan. So, thank you.
All right, that sounds good. We may need to have under the reference library a separate tab just for research tracking, because there's a lot of good things coming before the North Pacific Council. In fact, at one of our spring meetings, I think we need another North Pacific Fishery Management Council update on activity that is occurring. There are several actions that are going on with the North Pacific Council now, and an update might be a good thing to have in the spring. So our meetings in the spring will be quite busy already with those three items. Kevin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So a lot of focus that has come my way has been around Tanner Crab and Kodiak. And we mentioned it again today. We're lucky to have the stocks back in the condition that they're in. So I was taking a look at the Board of Fisheries agenda, and the statewide shellfish, which includes Kodiak, of course, is in March of 2025, but the proposal deadline is April 10th of 2024. And for Linda or Steph, somebody that's really part and parcel to the council process, is there maybe some benefit to us trying to pull together discussions around Kodiak Tanner Crab by taking a look at the agenda for the board that's already published and looking at the agenda for the North Council and seeing if we can drag some of these interests together around that subject? So that's the Board of Fish. It's a proposal deadline of April 10th, 2024, and a deliberation scheduled for a year later in 2025. And kind of leave that open for you guys.
Kevin, I think that's a good discussion to have a little further down the road. There is a nexus between the state and the federal process, and I think it's important that we try everything that we can to get as much information out so that the public and the agency and others will be able to utilize that information and be able to work with it. So, yes, I'd like to have a discussion with you further offline in regard to how we could try to organize that, if that's all right. And I see someone has their hand up. Our time for public comment has passed. So if you do have something you want to put in the chat, feel free to do that, but we aren't taking public comment at this time. So please take a look at your calendars. Take a look at the suggested idea for March 26th and possibly May 21st for spring meetings. And I'd like to get, before the end of the year, I'd like to have our spring meetings finalized so that we can have those set, because many of us have other things that we schedule and we'd like to not have a conflict with that. I would like to mention that Ms. Baker, Deputy Commissioner Baker, referenced the idea of possibly having more town hall meetings. We had the Kodiak one in September. There will be in November the Homer town hall meeting. And I know I've spoken with Ms. Olvey with regard to a possible Fairbanks meeting that may or may not be a town hall, but will also be an opportunity for the commissioner to come and speak to a large group in regard to bycatch, possibly after the first of the year, I understand. But what I would like to find out from the Bycatch Advisory Council members is if you have ideas or suggestions on potential venues, times, locations, meeting coordination with other meetings, for town hall meetings, for the commissioner. I think that he would be appreciative of our providing him with some suggestions so that he can plan accordingly based on his availability, of course. So please don't hesitate at all to submit information to me. One that was already mentioned to me is something in conjunction with the International Pacific Halibut Commission meeting in January, late January in Anchorage this year. It's actually the 100-year celebration. And so I think there are several venues and opportunities available down the road. And so it would be nice if we could maybe, in our report to the commissioner, have a discussion with him about some potential other places where he could go and hear about bycatch. So I have, the last on the agenda is whether there's final, comments from bycatch advisory council members. Now is a good time.
Madam Chair, just again to thank you for your work on that progress report. That was a big lift. And I think it'll be easier moving forward now that we have the template, but I appreciate the work on that. And I think it's going to be a handy tool, not only for us, but for the public to track the things that were in our report.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, and your help on filling in the gaps that I had missed was greatly appreciated. If you take a look at the progress report, I'm amazed at how many of the initiatives that were recommended by the bycatch task force have actually been put into play, particularly the state engagement. The state has gone above and beyond what we had recommended in regard to reaching out to the public and working with the public. And several of the management recommendations that have been proposed by through the state of Alaska and supported by the state at the North Pacific Council are basically creating a situation where the staff is pretty fully subscribed with their ability to analyze documents and prepare discussion papers. And so I think we need to be aware of that as we move down the road and try to look at our recommendations, be aware of staff constraints that might be in place. But I appreciate all the work that everyone's done through the bycatch advisory council through this first year. We've had 4 meetings. I think we have done a good job in trying to identify issues that have been addressed, and we're looking at some future issues to address. And just for the public's sake, again, the progress reports are posted. I did put a link to that in the chat. They are posted on the bycatch task force website at the state of Alaska. And if you, I think it's pretty easy to find, but if you have difficulty, you can probably Google it and it'll just come right up. So any other final comments? Kevin, Brian, Karma?
And for me, just thank you, Linda. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll be working on the report to the commissioner, which will be, after it's submitted to the commissioner, it will be published. But obviously our job is to recommend to the commissioner steps moving forward and to give him advice on bycatch actions, both on the 3 areas, state engagement, research, and management. And so our first responsibility is to provide a report to the commissioner, and following that, it will be published. So thank you again, everyone, and we'll see you in the spring.
Thanks, all.
Meeting is adjourned.